You're back with Annie on Solidarity Breakfast, and we've got Don Sutherland on the line. G'day, Don. How are you?
I'm really well, Annie. You?
It's been a bit of a mournful program today, so lots of sad and distraught things, but you're going to put aspiration under the microscope, aren't you?
Yeah, I'd love to have a talk about this, what I'm calling the word of the week, aspiration. And connect that to what's going on with the economy and what will be the ongoing struggle about the standard of living for the majority, the 90% majority who are the working class, whatever its composition. Before getting into it, though, Annie, my little indulgence is just to let listeners know, if they don't already, that this year is the 100th anniversary of the birth of the great E.P. Thompson.
Ah, yes.
E.P. Thompson was an English historian and described by one commentator as a masterful historian, and his magisterial work, The Making of the English Working Class, is one of the great books in our labour movement.
Yeah, it's true.
First published in 1963, but still available. It's still a great read and very useful for all of those people, the masses of people who are getting into class analysis. So with that, let's have a talk a little bit about aspiration and its class definition. Since the new income tax regime was talked about and then introduced very quickly by the Labor government, the Liberals have gone nuts, gone breathless, almost breathless in their furious reaction. And it's captured breathlessly by Suzanne Lee, the shadow treasurer, who said that the Labor package was a lifetime tax on aspiration. And there are all sorts of others. And this is a sort of a significant word in a way for a while. I'm not exactly sure how many people believe the nonsense, but the silly sense it might make is that, you know, people might wonder, well, what's wrong with people aspiring to get into higher and really high incomes? A lot of people in our movement.
That runs alongside the. You were telling me that new evidence is showing that homeless people are dying at the age of 44 on average.
Yeah, the Guardian Weekly was reporting that earlier in the week as well.
That's an aspiration, isn't it?
The average age for homeless people to die is 44 years. And that was based on a pretty reliable survey, pretty thorough one. And that made me really very cross and upset, and I must say a little bit more determined to pursue these issues. And it makes so much more sense. You see, in the context of all of this nonsense about aspiration, which the Liberals are going to be peddling very heavily, is what's really going on with the economy right now. And I want to come back to that in a little bit more detail. But the word of the week, aspiration. So I went to the My Macquarie Dictionary, and there's five different meanings and applications of the word, but the one that's relevant is it's the act of aspiring. A lofty or ambitious desire. So it's an aspire to do something that is interesting. And what the Liberals are defending is an aspiration for about 5 to 10% of the population in income terms to use existing and acquire new property and money that they can buy and sell with, and pay less tax for all that activity, less capital gains, and, of course, also negative gearing. So
Before you go on, they don't have an aspiration for the, and their mainstream media mates don't have an aspiration for the CFMEU or the Plumbers or the MUA for increasing their wages in their latest EBAs, interestingly enough.
Spot on. So DP, the MUA members at DP World, who won a wage increase, reported at 25% increase over 4 years to close the gap to the higher wages paid at the competitor, Patrick. That's bad. That's bad aspiration. Very bad.
Yeah, bad, bad.
If I can, I promise you I'm not trying to be Kevin, but yes, that's a bad. And the other one that's bad is closing the gap, of course.
Yep.
Aboriginal people who get militant about that. Oh, no, that's a bad aspiration. And another one, you can find another example of bad aspiration actually inside the Albanese tax cut formula, the new income tax scales. To the extent that middle income earners get a bigger tax cut than others in those scales, so it's skewed to middle income rather than the top 5-10%. Some of them get closer to being able to aspire towards maybe owning more than one property or setting up a family trust or whatever. And that, for the Liberals, is a bad.
Because they're supposed to be the beast of burden. They're supposed to be the ones carrying this society.
Yes, and this for the even lower incomes. So the act of aspiring is actually something that is, from the Liberals' point of view, is something that they pretend ought to be available to everybody, but which at every turn, both in government and out of government, they try to define and restrict to the 5 or 10%.
Yeah, quarantine it to the very rich.
Yes, exactly. So it's an what the Liberals are on about on that is an aspiration protection racket. But the reason why I think it's worth having a closer look, no, I'll just say this one other, is that there is a sense even in which the Albo-Chalmers changes, what is the new scheme that will apply from July 1, is even it in its own way strengthened the cult of aspiration. It only does minimal harm, if any. It's not going to stop those at the 5 and 10% highest levels.
As if anything would stop the greed machine.
It's not going to stop the practicing, the already established aspirators. But as I say, leave intact the possibility of maybe some others breaking into it. Well, I think everything about the DP world, I put this in inverted commas, the word scary, is that there would be the odd wolfie here and there who might be in a position themselves to practice into the aspiration by getting a second property or something of that nature that they could then play the game, especially the negative gearing game. So, goodness, I would never expect that. Of course, the effect of that overall and its intent, to the extent that anyone else breaks into that 5 or 10% and the games they play, it dilutes working class bargaining power overall. And that, we need to keep an eye on, I think.
Well, actually, that's interesting because there's been this muddying of waters where the people who are professionals are under the pump, while the trades people are often accumulating relatively large amounts of wealth and stability. So our society is completely on its head.
So there is a portion. portion of the working class that have got into those aspirational money practices. And it's a dilemma, I think. I don't think that it's huge, but I think it's enough to be of concern because it changes, if you like, the attitude towards solidarity.
Well, it was part of John Howard's push to have people become shareholders. It's the same thing.
It embeds self-centeredness and selfishness.
Yeah.
And that aligns the cult of the individual that the Liberal Party says, and I'm quoting from the Liberal Party platform now, quote, we simply believe in individual freedom and free enterprise. And if you share this belief, then ours is the party for you. So the to the extent that that does infect the solidarity commitment of parts of the working class is something we have to take seriously. But of course, what that approach to the individual freedom thing, it's really not about individuality. It's about the stifling of the potential development of individualities in the majority of the population and the protection of individual freedom as self-centeredness and selfishness, individualism, if you like, not individuality. Because the Liberal formula locks people out. Most people are locked out of the full development of their potentiality.
So what, they're lying?
Well, it's not that I don't think we can reduce it to lying. I think it is it's the core of a value system that is essential to the reproduction of exploitation.
Yeah, that's right.
And of human beings.
Yeah.
So I think, and there is an alternative to it. There's another way of looking. A lot of people will say, well, what's wrong with people who do more complex work, both managerial and technical and so on, what's wrong with them being paid at a higher level?
Well, tell that to university lecturers.
Well, I think
on casual contracts.
Well, I think, I think the irony of that is that there are an awful lot of university intellectuals who established themselves as lecturers and so on, senior lecturers in the 80s and the 90s, now retired, who actually bought into negative gearing schemes and so on, and benefited, took advantage of it when it was made available to them. Of course, I can't imagine people who are contractor lecturers in the 2020s being ever able to do that. I can't imagine it. So when we look at this word aspiration, there is a danger in it, and we have to pay attention to it, and that will spin off into how we think about what's going on in the economy in the next year or two. Because when you look at it, you've got to keep in mind that, for example, if you're on what the tax cuts mean is that if you're on the minimum wage, it's about $3 a day. Does that improve your standard of living very much? If you're on the medium wage,
that's not even a cup of coffee in Melbourne.
It's $5.30 a day.
Maybe a coffee.
If you're on the average wage, it's about a little bit more than that. Nearly $6 a day. Now, does that really improve the standard of living for the majority of wage earners and their families? So the battle over the standard, or the struggle over the standard of living, is going to continue, and it's going to continue in the context, as we learn this week. Well, I'll just say, by the way, that those numbers indicate that, let's imagine if Morrison had introduced what Albo has now introduced, we would probably have opposed them.
Mm. Yeah, well, you know what that brings to mind? A saying, better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
Yes. So everything is relative, of course. So back to the economy. It's really hard to get a handle on it from mainstream media and the way it reports. You've got to dig beneath the surface a bit, and even there you don't get all the answers unless you do the work yourself. But the message generally is that even in mainstream media, they're saying the economy is stagnant. So for the remainder of the term of the Labor government, we have a stagnant economy that could get worse. That's reinforced by now. To my knowledge, no mainstream commentator has reviewed the chart that the Reserve Bank produces to justify its whatever its decision is. And that shows and confirms that that globally, the trend is continued stagnation in the global economy and in the major individual economies like the USA and China, the Eurozone, and so on. Continued stagnation, and possibly it could get worse, possibly. The Australian Industry Group, now I know you love the Australian Industry Group, and this will so I couldn't leave him out of our little story today. They have just produced their new business activity report, and it's actually a very useful resource for any of us who want to pay closer attention, believe it or not. But it says that business activity in manufacturing particularly is not just stagnant but falling. And they've got a particular index that I won't get too technical about. Interestingly, but it's quite comprehensive, except in its telling of the story, it leaves out the thing that's most important to their members. It says nothing about profits. You have to go elsewhere. So, you know, here is the most important thing to their members, but they exclude that from the story that they present. But nevertheless, their story is also one of stagnation, and already in manufacturing, some parts of manufacturing, it's worse. The profit story is, there'll be more to come in the future. But
yeah,
the present is that it's profits are relatively high in manufacturing, not so much for smaller manufacturers than for the big ones.
Now, that's normal. That's usual.
So the big deal in the next few weeks, leading right through to the middle of the year, is going to be the budget.
Yep.
And what happens with housing. And the Greens, and David Pocock in particular, are presenting the public with the opportunity to maintain the pressure regarding wealth taxes, especially capital gains and negative gearing. And so they should. And then the second big issue, because that's all about the battle over equality and fairness. And the second big issue, of course, is what the budget does about climate change.
Yes.
Will it accelerate efforts to slow climate change down and lay the foundations potentially for reversal 10, 15, 20 years from now? Who knows?
Well, that's a good note to finish, you know, because we're right at the end of our time. So quickly.
Yeah. Well, the only other one is the annual wage review, and we'll come back to that another time. The decisive factor is not just going to be what people like David Pocock say or the Greens. It's going to be whether all the people's organisations can get together and in their solidarity with each other can help each other to make a big impact to prevent the environment and Australians from being made to pay for continued stagnation or even worse.
Ah, yes, all right.
We'll leave it at that, eh?
Yeah. Thanks very much for your conversation this morning, Don.
Lovely to talk again, and we'll see each other soon.
Yeah.